Welcome to the Super Gamer Podcast. Welcome to the new Super Gamer Podcast, episode 172. Our guest this week is a member of Byscore, a member of the Baltimore Gamer Symphony Orchestra, a cosplayer, has a master's in professional writing, plays bass, guitar, trombone, vocals, is formerly of Quicksave, which we will get into right away. We have Carrie Wood here. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
So yeah, has it been announced yet? Is Quicksave done for you?
It's been announced. Yeah, my last show with Quicksave was this past Saturday. After a few years with these good lads, it's time to move on.
Right. Is it, you know, are you kind of bummed right now, or has it really set in yet?
There's a lot of emotions. These past two shows were great in a lot of ways. I thought we sounded really, really tight. But you know, it's always hard to say goodbye to something that you care about. A lot of complex emotions, basically. I'm leaving Quicksave basically because I'm moving out to California this fall, and it's hard to really be in a band based out of Baltimore, Maryland, when you're going to be about 2,800 miles away. So they're going to continue on as a six piece, and I have no doubt in my mind that those guys are going to absolutely kill it without me. So I really look forward to what they're going to do next. But happy to have had these shows with them between BitGen Gamer Fest and the couple of shows we had this weekend. Sad I'm saying goodbye, but looking forward to what the next steps are going to be for everyone.
Yeah, and joining you for some of those shows, if not all of them, you had Lacey Johnson. Was she like living with you during that time?
Yeah, basically Lacey and her partner Peter were living in my house between BitGen Gamer Fest and these couple of shows the week after. I love Lacey so much. She's such an inspiration for me in a lot of ways, and she's become a really good friend as well over the last year or so. And I was stoked to be able to do these shows with her. It meant a lot to be able to do these last two shows for me with Quicksave with her. Lacey and I had talked about trying to sort of put together a tour, basically. And the logistics for like a true tour were just impossible. You know, Quicksave's a band of seven adults who all have jobs, and that's it's very difficult to try and figure that out. But we were able to string together two weekends. So Lacey had been booked for BitGen Gamer Fest, and then she basically hung out with me in my house in Maryland. I got to show her around Baltimore, take her to an O's game, had a really, really chill time with her during the week. And then we did two more shows, and then I put her and Peter back on a plane out to LA.
I'm glad the O's came up, because I have to say I am a Blue Jays fan as a Canadian.
Okay.
So we are division rivals, but that's okay. You're having a very good year.
Look, the O's are killing it. I keep waiting for them to completely fall apart. It's nice to see the O's do well, especially since my other main squeeze, the Washington Nationals, are not doing well at all. So if I can go 1-for-2 on a baseball season with my teams, I'm feeling pretty good about it.
Well, speaking of the Nationals, let's just start with, what does Pudge mean to you?
Oh my God, Pudge Rodriguez. He is probably my all-time favorite baseball player. Former catcher for the Nationals, but probably more prominently known for his time spent with the Rangers and the Marlins, among several other teams. A complete journeyman, Hall of Fame catcher. Pudge Rodriguez is my guy, so to speak.
So your favorite player, how did it feel when you met Pudge and the first thing he said was, "Oh, I hear you're a sore loser in baseball"?
You have done your research, my dude. So when I was a wee lass, I played one season of Baltimore County Recreational League softball, and I was a catcher, and I wore number 7 because Pudge was my favorite player. And fast forward about 12 years, and I'm interning for the Washington Nationals, where my father was the post-game radio host. And he told Pudge of an incident where we were, my rec league team was up 10-0, but like it was too early in the game for the mercy rule to kick in. And we ended up, it wasn't even a loss. Like we ended up ending the game tied with the other team 10-10. But I had a, in my father's eyes, iconic meltdown about it because I thought we should have obviously handily won the game. And so he told Pudge that I was like a real sore loser in softball, which is fair because I was. And so when I was interning for the Nationals in creative services in 2011, I went down into the clubhouse and introduced myself, and he basically went, "Oh yeah, I've heard about you. I heard you're a real sore loser." And I was like, "Yeah." Yeah, you heard right. but to my own credit, you know, he at least said, he says, you know, I would much prefer having someone like you on the team than someone who was okay with losing
right,
like that.
That's
I was
fair.
Like, all right, vindication.
So are you a sore loser in any video games?
I feel like I've gotten a lot better about stuff like video games. You know, I don't consider myself an especially competitive person. You know, I don't play fighting games or anything like that. I tend to stick with dense single player role playing games most of the time. So I don't get too terribly heated when it comes to playing online in something like Smash Brothers or Mario Kart. You know, I know where I'm at. I know if I at least put in the right amount of effort.
There's no, you never have a teammate that you're like, "Hey, we should have won this."
No, I haven't had that happen on the video game side of things for sure.
Do you play any baseball video games? And if you do, would you play as the Orioles or the Nationals?
It's been a while since I've played a baseball game. Honestly, I think the thing that kills me about baseball video games these days is by and large, they're all sort of simulator games. Like MLB The Show's the biggest one. Rest in peace, MLB 2K. But, you know, the baseball's an exceptionally difficult sport, and the video game recreations of baseball are accordingly also pretty difficult. And I never took any joy in the simulator style baseball games. You know, when I was a kid, I would go over friends' houses and play stuff like, you know, Ken Griffey Jr.'s Slugfest and the arcade style games. But, you know, currently in the year of our Lord 2K23, we don't really have much in the way of like an arcade style baseball game. But, you know, if I was to be playing any baseball game in 2023, assuming we were going off of 2023 rosters, yeah, I'm picking the Orioles this year. The Nats are awful.
Before we get off baseball, I do want to ask, because the coolest thing about going to a baseball game to me is like walking the concourse, just seeing, you know, everything that's there to offer. What's the best food at an Orioles game?
Waffle fries with crab dip. There's a few different spots on the concourse where you can get them. They're just called Krabby Fries. They used to be waffle fries, and I thought the waffle fries were a little bit better than what I had this past week, which are just sort of like, not quite steak fries, but sort of like halfway to steak fries. It's still crispy. It's, you know, a waffle fry really, you know, you can get a lot of the crab dip on a single waffle fry, and a waffle fry manages to stay crisp under all that moisture. So yeah, look, anytime you can get a crab dip on a French fry, that's some A+ stuff in my book.
And also, speaking of food, and one more thing about Lacey Johnson, what are these Pikmin drinks? How do I get a Pikmin drink?
Oh, sure. So, yeah, if you follow me and Lacey on social media, you may have seen that we got Pikmin drinks. So Kung Fu Tea did a partnership with Nintendo, and they've done it before. They've done like Kirby themed drinks before, but they have like a Pikmin drink. I got it. It's very fruity, which is not my normal go-to when it comes to boba. But it's got like the mango popping bubbles and whatnot. It's very sweet. It's cloyingly sweet. But if you get one, you can pick out one of the little like straw toppers that make it look like the top of a Pikmin head.
Okay,
so
right.
You know, it's cute.
Okay, arguably the main reason you're here to talk about Byscore and your
sure.
debut album, The Hot Light, out now on Bandcamp.
Yes.
So originally, I heard this on the Game Grooves podcast, which you were on less than a month ago, I think.
Somewhere within the last 6 weeks, let's say.
Okay. Your original idea for Byscore was to only cover like score screen tracks, like results.
Yeah.
But I don't think you've even got one yet. So when did you stray from that path?
Yeah, look, I mean, the original idea for Byscore, if you haven't heard the other, if you haven't heard the Game Grooves episode that I was on recently, basically it was, haha, wouldn't it be funny if you had a band of bisexuals that just covered high score screen music and call it Byscore? So Ian and I are both bisexual. So like we at least got that half going. But on the Hotlight, on the Bandcamp and eventually streaming version of the Hotlight, there are no like result screen music or anything like that, but there will be one. It's arranged. It's halfway recorded. We are doing a physical release soon, so we'll get there.
All right. You've also got your debut live show coming up at Virtua Ongaku 17, August 27th. I saw you play with Ian and his something goblins.
Band of Exceptional Goblins.
Exceptional Goblins. Yes, I saw that at VGM Con, and it was awesome.
Thank you.
But I remember you his antics made you laugh, and you were complaining like, I screwed up some notes because he was making me laugh. So if you had to like sit down with Ian and be like, you can't make me laugh while we're playing.
I think it's more that I'm getting more used to Ian's particular stage presence. It's easier now that I've played a few shows with him, to know sort of like how to like really zone in on my own playing rather than pay any attention to whatever the hell he's got going on.
This year was my first VGM Con, and I've never been to like Magfest or any of the bigger ones. But it did strike me, I'm not really like in the scene, but I'm familiar with some people, and I was like, wow, there are like a lot of the actual, VGM musicians here. Like, that's the core audience, clearly.
Yeah, it's, this was also my first VGM Con, and it was wild to me to see, such a concentration of sort of the community at large all at one small hotel in Minnesota. It's interesting in that way. I think for me, it almost put like a different sort of pressure on when it came to actually performing, because it wasn't performing just for like a general audience. It was, I'm performing for my peers today.
Right. It is a very supportive community, though, I think, as evidenced by the fact that they're all there.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. No, the video game community is the VGM community is just, by and large, just like really, really nice people. Like there's always room at the table for someone new. Everyone just sort of wants to hear what everybody else is working on, which is just so cool.
Are you intentionally, or is there any way you're differentiating Byscore from like other projects you've done with Ian, or even from Quicksave?
Sure. I mean, Quicksave is, used to be 7, currently 6, very specific people. And, really until these couple of live shows with Lacey, it's not like we really even brought other people on stage with us. Well, we did live and learn with Mark Schimmelbusch a couple of times when we gigged with him. For me, like the big thing, the big differentiator is I no longer have to arrange for a very specific set of instruments for a very specific set of people. Byscore is sort of freeing in that sense almost. It's interesting. It's different, because it's just me and Ian, and he and I are both multi-instrumentalists, and we both also know a lot of other people who we would want to bring in for something like horns or percussion or anything like that, that are outside of our particular realm of expertise. But I think the big differences between, Byscore and then Ian's, Exceptional Goblins is with, the Exceptional Goblin stuff, that's all that's Ian's arranging, that's his song picks, that's his mixing, his mastering. That's like 100% his stuff, even if like, even if I'm being brought in to like do some session work for him on any of that, that's all his ideas, his arranging, all of that. Whereas the Byscore stuff, I do a lot of the arranging. There's a lot more sort of back and forth, really like 50% input as far as, you know, what the final product is really going to sound like. So yeah, I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. How long has Byscore been in the works, like before you actually announced it?
March, maybe. You know, I made the tweet about like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if there was a band called this? And then he was like, yeah, we should do that. And I was like, all right, well, I guess we should start working on material if we're going to do it. So it was maybe, you know, kicking around for maybe about, let's say, 8 weeks before he and I had the first single out, which was Foreign Pastoralism. So it wasn't some great secret that we kept under wraps for a long time. It was like, oh, okay, good. No, like, let's actually do this. And then we just did it.
Again, on Game Grooves, you had mentioned the genesis of the name The Hotlight. And it certainly sounds like basically the secret to this band is you have an idea that you think is totally out there. And Ian's like, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, Ian's become my greatest enabler, basically. though I think in a lot of ways I've become the same for him. It's just, it's a endless feedback loop of two goblins shouting stupid ideas at each other over the internet and saying like, no, we should actually do this. And our output so far has been pretty good for a couple of months. So,
yeah. What's the response been like? I mean, the album hasn't been out very long, so.
It's been honestly like incredible to see. I've been very humbled, very flattered by the response to The Hotlight. You know, we're just a couple months old. We just passed, you know, 100 some subscribers on our YouTube channel, which is always nice to see. We love to defeat the algorithm in whatever manner we can, but I have been just like very, very flattered. So we are basically just past the month point. The Hotlight released on July 14th and it's now August 15th. And yeah, you know, I look at the amount of support that has come through so far and the reviews and the really nice things that people have said about our work on this album. So yeah, it's very humbling, very, very flattering to get that response, especially from a lot of our peers within the community as well. So it's, we've got all plenty of other stuff planned for Byscore through the end of the year already. So it's definitely the kind of response that fuels further music for us.
I just realized with you moving to Cali, I guess your days with the symphony are kind of numbered.
Yes, this is going to be my final season with the Baltimore Gamer Symphony Orchestra as a full member musician. Yeah, I am almost certainly still going to be doing some arranging for them in the future, but I will no longer be performing with the orchestra.
And this is their 10th year anniversary, is it not?
Yes, this season is the 10th anniversary season for the BGSO. Which is nice in a lot of ways. I mean, anytime you can get any ensemble like that to 10 successful years, it's pretty good. But beyond that, because of the nature of this like anniversary season, it's like a best of season for us. So all of the charts are stuff that the orchestra has done in years previously. So what's nice is that all the music is already out. We're not waiting on parts to get edited or anything like that, and so much of the music is stuff that most of our musicians are already familiar with to some degree, so I think it's going to sound really, really good.
I am led to believe that you can sing every word to every song on the Pokemon 2BA Master album.
Yeah, it's definitely one that I grew up listening to quite a bit. I think that was one of the first cassette tapes I ever owned, was To Be a Master. It was that, the Animaniacs soundtrack, and a Nicktoons songs tape were the three that I remember really playing a lot on long car rides. So yeah, To Be a Master is I don't know, it's iconic. If you're my age, if you're in your early to mid 30s and you were part of the first wave of Pokemon fandom, I think it's pretty easy to latch on to the music that 4Kids wrote for that.
Can I ask for, you can say no. Can I ask for a snippet of What Kind of Pokemon Are You by Joshua
What
Tyler.
Kind of Pokemon are you? How do you do the things you do? Share with me your secrets deep inside. What kind of Pokemon are you? Are you loyal through and through? And do you have a heart that's true? What kind of Pokemon are you?
Thank you. That was awesome.
No problem.
Also from your childhood, your parents didn't want to buy you a console. I got this from Comic Wow, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't want to buy you a console, fearing you would never go outside. Your first console, well, your mom had an Atari, so that's kind of what you first played. What was your first console, and did you go outside?
So my first game system was a Game Boy Color. My parents did let me have handheld, so I had Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance, DS. But my first console, outside of playing Frogger on my mother's Atari 2600, was a Wii that I bought off of one of my local musician friends because he was trying to buy a new Stratocaster, so he sold me his Wii and his games for like $200 or something like that. That was my freshman year of college.
Wow, that's late.
Yeah, I have since gone back. I now have I've got contemporary consoles, but I have since also gone back and purchased a lot of the stuff that was around when I was a kid. You know, I have a Super Nintendo, I have a GameCube, I have an N64, I have a PS2. So it's there now. And it wasn't like I wasn't exposed to console gaming as a kid at all. I had, you know, I grew up in a pretty cute little neighborhood in Reisterstown, Maryland, where there were a lot of other kids my age in the neighborhood. And so I had a friend with a PlayStation 1, and then I had a different friend with an N64, and then the twins who lived across the street had a Sega Genesis. And then I had friends in high school who had stuff like a PS2 and a Dreamcast and whatnot. So my parents didn't really care that I was playing console games at all, as long as I was sort of doing it elsewhere and at least getting the socialization aspect of you know, playing with friends.
Right.
I think their concern was like, oh, if we buy her an N64, she's never going to leave the house and she's going to turn out like a weird, unsocialized gremlin. And instead, I'm a weird, socialized gremlin.
I was going to say. Yeah, I'm shocked that like you say, I mean, you obviously were exposed, played it all over the place, but like handheld excluded, you went from Atari to the Wii.
Yeah, that's basically it. Which is wild to think about in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
It's a pretty big jump. Yeah, my mom purchased an Atari 2600. I want to say during sort of like the industry crash in 83, because she said she got all of her games out of the bargain bin. So she had a, you know, a handful of things. The one that I really remember playing is Frogger. I would come home from like first and second grade and negotiate for a half hour on the system to see if I could, you know, get a higher score in Frogger before having to start on my homework, basically.
Right. you're big into cosplay. You've judged at least one contest that I know of, the 2021 Baltimore Comic Con.
Mm-hmm.
What are you looking for in a cosplay contest? What wins in your eyes?
Oh, I ran the cosplay contest at both 2021 and 2022's Baltimore Comic Con. And I had two fabulous co-judges, my my friend Amanda, also known as Blue Circles, and then Chibi Tifa, who was on the I want to say the 2021 World Cosplay Showcase. She they won America's team and got to represent the United States in the global WCS contest. But speaking only for myself, I want to see a degree of accuracy and I want to just see clean craftsmanship. I don't necessarily need to see like the biggest, most impressive, like over the top foam armor costume, because sometimes those are really messy. Sometimes those have, you know, hot glue hanging off of it and whatnot. It's not necessarily the most put together outfit just because it's big. We awarded some awards this year to costumes that I think if you were to look at them at a distance might not seem like the most technically impressive thing, but you know, upon closer inspection, it's just like beautiful craftsmanship, clean lines, just good overall work and a degree of accuracy that that sometimes you just don't get otherwise. So
another part of your past life, I guess, you've created price and collection guides professionally for various nerdy things like comics and video games. Do you still have your finger on the pulse for that kind of stuff? Like if I were to ask, like, what comics should I be holding on to right now?
Oh, yeah. So my prior day job, I used to work for Gemstone Publishing, which is the publisher of the Overstreet Comic Book Price Guide. I was an assistant editor at Gemstone for about 6 years. And then the pandemic happened and I changed directions at that time, like a lot of other people. So I wouldn't say I really have the pulse on comics the same way that I used to. Just, you know, at this point, being out of it for, you know, 3.5-4 years, it's the industry moves very quickly and it can be difficult to really keep up on it accordingly. But yeah, I mean, the comic industry also just seems like it's impossible to really sort of vibe on what's going to happen. I actually recently just sold almost my entire comic book collection. Cause at this point, if I'm going to read a comic book, I'm either going to read it online or an app or just buy a trade paperback. So I got rid of all my floppies, save for basically 2 or 3 like key issues that I wanted to hang on to. But yeah, I had a really good time working for Gemstone overall. That was a really interesting experience. But I, you know, when it comes to the pricing itself, all of that was handled by Mr. Bob Overstreet and his team, whereas what I was really doing there was more of the editorial content and editing market reports for grammar and spelling mistakes and that sort of deal. So I wasn't really the one putting the prices together.
Favorite comic?
Oh. I mean, that changes. There's a handful I really like. I really loved the series Sex Criminals by Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky. That was really cool. Just an interesting examination of what a relationship can look like. When it comes to like the mainstream superhero stuff, I really, really loved Captain Marvel, like the Kelly Sue DeConnick run of Captain Marvel. I think really, really elevated that character in a lot of ways. Obviously was the basis for the MCU adaptation of that character. I have a Captain Marvel tattoo because of that run of comics. I thought that was great. I think it's a shame that Civil War II came out and just really torpedoed all the work that they had done on Carol Danvers' character, but you know, it's fine. I can just ignore that ever happened. outside of that, I honestly really liked a lot of the recent, like the modernization of Archie comics in a lot of way. You know, some of the stuff from, let's say, 8 or 9 years ago now. Yeah, that was good. Saga is incredible. Comic books are good. I don't really know what more to say.
Well, let's end back on Byscore. What's sure. I know it's only been a little bit, but what's been your favorite part so far, and what are you looking forward to?
I mean, honestly, I just got to go back to the response to Byscore so far. It's been really, really flattering to see. I mean, to be at BitGen GamerFest with Quicksave and to have complete strangers come over to me and say, "Hey, the Byscore album rips." I was like, "Oh man, like I was not expecting to hear this today." Yeah, that's been really incredible. Outside of that, I mean, I think being able to work with Ian in this capacity has really been great. I think he and I have styles that mesh with each other really, really well. And I think we push each other to do better and to do more and to really, elevate our game here in a lot of ways, particularly on the arranging side. I honestly think there's a couple arrangements of mine on the Hot Light that I think are some of my best work yet. And we actually just recently finished a track that's going to be coming out on a Game Grooves compilation later this year. That I'm just like really especially proud of. I think the fact that it is just me and Ian, and if we want to pull in other collaborators, we can do that. And if not, then we don't. Then it's just us. It's very freeing in a lot of ways. I can feel it, I feel a little more sort of like fast and loose when it comes to my arranging. And I think it allows for a degree of creativity that I didn't have in Quicksave and that I don't get to experience with arranging for the BGSO, because again, Quicksave, very specific set of instruments, and orchestra is a much larger but still very specific set of instruments as far as what has to sort of be on the page at the end of the day. And with Byscore, it's just like, if I want to bring in a horn, then I'll bring in a horn. If I want to lean hard into synths, then I'll lean hard into synths. It's really sort of, I think, expanded what I'm able to do on an arrangement, even though it's just me and him. So
cool. Well, people should check it out. The band is Byscore. You can find them youtube.com/@Byscore, byscore.bandcamp.com. And the album is The Hot Light, which you can find on Bandcamp and soon to be on streaming services, I believe.
Yeah, we're working on it. It's a pain in the ass. I'll just say that much. And then here's the other thing I'll say is we'll have a couple of sort of non-album singles out by the end of the year. Again, we're involved in another Game Grooves project. We previously did the Undertale album and the Pizza Tower album. And the Game Grooves hasn't announced this thing that we're doing yet, so I'm not really at liberty to discuss it, but like there will be another Byscore appearance on another Game Grooves album by the end of the year. And then, as I alluded to earlier, we will have a I'll just say this, we're doing a deluxe physical edition of The Hot Light. It's going to be a cassette tape. We are limiting it to, I think, 50 copies. It will have new artwork on the J card. It will have an additional track that will be exclusive to the physical edition. I'm going to say for probably at least 60 days after that comes out. We will almost certainly release that later on streaming and on Bandcamp as a separate single. But your first chance to be able to hear that will be on the physical tape. it will come with additional merch like stickers, a button, and then probably something else once we sort of decide what that is. So we're in the process of getting the tape exclusive track together now. We're in the process of getting the tape exclusive artwork together now. So I'm hoping we can announce pre-orders on that within the next 2 to 3 weeks, maybe.
Cassette tape is so punk rock.
Yeah, it is. I would love to do like vinyl, since I have a pretty extensive vinyl collection, but vinyl is very expensive to produce, and tapes are not. So so we're going tapes.
All right. And people can also check you out August 27th on Virtua on Gaku 17.
That's correct. Yeah. That's going to be the first official Byscore show that that will feature us being billed as Byscore. So yeah, very excited for that. Very, very flattered that Kent and the Virtua Ongaku crew would have us. You know, obviously Ian and I both have done plenty of other things with our other projects. But it's nice to get the nod regardless. And hopefully we'll have more specifically Byscore shows on the horizon as well, though I will also be out in California in just a couple weeks to support Ian on some of the shows he's doing. One is in Sacramento, and then one is in, where the hell is it? It's at the Ivy Room in Albany, California, where we will be opening up for Bit Brigade.
Cool.
So I will be there for those shows, but those are Ian Cowell shows. but there might be some Byscore tunes on their set list too.
Carrie Wood, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me, Mark.